Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace! To nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway, wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
We're back to Uncensored. We're just talking about all the last-minute prep that we're doing, all the gift-giving, all the kids make it interesting. Got to, sort through all the things, figure out what my wife's overbought, shift things around to upcoming birthdays. So I'm sure all the parents can relate. That's what I got. I got into, like, all the Christmas activities this weekend, too. We went and saw Santa. We went over to Indiana and saw the Grinch.
Good.
Yeah, that kids mostly like that. My middle daughter was scared of the Grinch.
Oh, yeah.
It was a very good Grinch.
Was he in character?
And in character. We walked up and he was rubbing an onion on his armpits. Yeah, and he was kind of mean, which in a funny way. Like my son walks up, he asks my son his name, and he's like, and he says his name. And the Grinch kind of starts going back and like forth with him a couple questions, and my son keeps saying and he's like, all right, you got to work on this, you got to be more confident in your delivery here, son. And he like starts kind of coaching him, and my son kind of came around and he thought it was funny. But my daughter was terrified of this, and then because my middle daughter was terrified of this, my younger daughter was scared of him. So we ended up finally getting a picture with them. But then the next day we went ice skating. So like, I mean, my wife is just mom of the year, finding all the things. We were busy all weekend long. So,
do y'all do the lights under Louisville, either of you?
I've never been to it, but my mom has like a Christmas tradition where she takes the kids and then has them spend the night at her house. And so she did that on Friday.
Yeah. My daughter loves going around looking at Christmas lights, but I haven't. She may have gone when she was a baby and not old enough to remember.
Mm-hmm.
So I was talking to Liz yesterday. I was like, I got to see if we can still get in there before it's too late.
Yeah, you can usually get tickets. I mean, so what we're talking about, Louisville has this cave underground. It's a man-made cave. I think it was it originally built in the Cold War era? Is that the story behind it?
I don't remember the timing, but I know it was meant to store stuff away safe.
And so now, I think they store servers under there, and the city pays to store its salt under there because it's waterproof. It doesn't rain, obviously. But this cave's been around for a long time. In mm-hmm. fact, I used to have a boss that would take acid as a kid, and like a teenager, and they would go down there and have Roman candle wars. And it's been around for a long time. And this person, Erica, but you can probably put together who I'm talking about. Uh-huh. But the now they've turned it into, there's a BMX trail you can do, there's zip lining. And every year they put up all these Christmas lights, and you can drive your car underground for probably a mile or more of Christmas lights. And it's really cool. My kids like going, you roll the windows down, then get out of their seats, and there's, you know, all the characters they like. So that's a good one. We'll probably end up doing that at some point. We'll squeeze it in.
Yeah.
And it's a good one to hit on a weekday if you can, because the weekends are crazy.
Yeah.
But we still got a couple more events I'm sure that my wife's going to squeeze in. So
we did the gingerbread houses yesterday.
Mm. Yeah.
Those are our families.
We've got those. We haven't done them yet. I don't know when we're going to do them. Yeah. So it's kind of getting down to crunch time. My wife works a couple nights before Christmas still. So we've only got a few nights left of Christmas activities. But I managed to squeeze in some hunting this weekend. Did you all do anything?
No, not hunting related.
I cast a fly rod for about 5 minutes.
I think I'm done. Mm. Yeah, I don't know. You know, before you get into your story real quick, because I do think I'm done, I set my last sits with rifle, and then I just don't think, I don't love the cold. I don't think I'm going to just, I don't know. And then I missed the shot with my bow, so confidence is kind of messed up from that. But speaking of like Christmas and this, so last night we went to a Christmas event, and we've had a couple like family events lately, and everyone knows I've been trying to go out to hunt, and some sides of my family there's hunters there too, and some of them they're just like, oh, we know she's been doing this. And one was like, so Erica, did you catch your deer yet? And I'm like, No, I haven't. And, oh, well, I saw one in my front yard, a big 8-pointer. And I'm like, oh, good for you. Did you shoot it?
Did you catch it?
Yeah,
did you catch it? No, I just been seeing them everywhere, though.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm just jealous in my heart that everywhere we go. And then last night, which I am very happy for this girl. It was her first hunt. She's like 12. Okay, we go over there, and they're like, Erica, did you get a deer yet? They didn't say catch. They know better than that. And I was like, nah, I did miss, though, on my bow. And they were like, oh, you know, it happens. And they were like, you should see the one that my little cousin got. And I was like, oh, let me see. And she busts out this picture in the video of her shooting a rifle at 70 yards to take out this buck. And I was like, gosh, dang it. Like, I was very happy for her. And she's going to get it mounted and stuff. But everyone's like, you catch your deer yet? And I'm like, no, I did not.
Same. Yeah, that's my life right now. You show up to anybody you haven't seen in a while, and they're like, how'd deer season go? I'm like, it's still going.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, but you went out?
Well, I went out. You know, everybody's been talking about how they've been locked down and there's so much food. And on camera, I've only had one big buck come through, and my camera had gotten knocked down. So it was antler down. So I could only see the base of his antlers, but he was huge. You saw the photo of this thing. He looks like a cow. Very, very old deer. He's got the brisket forming in the front. His legs look like they're toothpicks because his body's so big. And there's no doubt when you see him, it's a mature buck. But I never got to see the antlers on him. But, I mean, he came through 3 or 4 hours after shooting light. So, you know, it is what it is. But the only deer I've had on camera during daylight has been a little spike. He's probably 80 pounds. And then I've had a bunch of does coming through. But Braden, Friday night, we were texting with the O2 guys and Glenn and some just a hunting text that we have, and Braden was like, I think the second rut's on. You know, he said he's seen a bunch of activity, and I'm like, all right, I might go out and try to call a little bit, because I've never hunted the second rut. I'm usually done by that point. And I was like, I'll go out and try it. And I didn't get anything on Saturday. I didn't even see anything. At the beginning of shooting light, I let a few bleats go, and because I'm kind of just hunting it like a softer rut, like maybe not as aggressive. And I did a few bleats, and I heard what sounded like a deer stand up and move around. It did not sound like a squirrel. I'm overwhelmed in squirrels at this spot. It is insane. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's squirrel city. If I could shoot a shotgun in this area, I could just go out there and lay these things down, stack them up, limit out in like 12 minutes. But I heard it. What I'm guessing was, I do it, and three bleats, I hear standing up and walking, and it sounds like it's coming to me. And I'm like, it's probably a young one. But at this point, I mean, I'm really just starting to freak out about the foods. Like, I'm almost out of my grind. I've only got a few hams left and then some organ meat that I've forgotten about. So the pressure's on to shoot literally whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, all right, this is it. He's going to come in, and I'm going to shoot whatever this thing is, spike or not. Nothing happened. And then I went out on Sunday, and it had rained a little bit. I have been hunting, so I'm on this tree farm, and it's cleared all the way up to the wood line, and the tree that I'm in, there's no trees that are like back into the woods on the property line. Like, I would have to cross the property line to be in a good tree that has cover. So I'm kind of out in the open, and I knew when I set this spot up that I could potentially get busted behind me. Like, I'm very open, and even if they come out in front of me, I knew, because they come out, the way I have it set up, there's kind of two main spots that they come in, maybe three, I guess there's three main spots, and two of them are behind me, but they've been favoring the other side per my cameras. I have two cameras out there, so I'm like, all right, this gives me good chances. They're coming from this giant field and this private property, like hundreds of acres, it's kind of around, and they're coming in, and if they came in and did what they normally do from what I've seen, they come in and they go down the tree line, like the planted trees. So I'm like, if I let them pass, if I can be still, and I mean, I'm totally exposed. It's a walnut tree with no coverage. So I'm up in this thing, and I'm not super high either. I'm like, if I could be still enough, I could let them pass me, and I could get a shot behind me at 20 yards. And if I see them, a lot of times they'll come from the other side, and they kind of come at an angle towards me. And I'm like, if I can see them in time, I'll be able to get one coming. But the problem is behind me on the two spots that they come out. So yesterday I sat there until like it was 8:30. I'd been out for two and a half hours in the tree, and I turned my head slightly. I mean, there's no other way to check behind. I just shouldn't have checked. I should have like just been watching to see if they come around, but I was starting to get antsy a little bit. So I kind of turned my head like this, and I see two does behind me. And one of them was the big doe I've been looking for. She's huge. And I'm like, okay, I probably turned back too fast. And I get my bow, and I think my body's blocking it. And I just kind of sit there for a minute, and nothing happens. And I finally, like, they're gone. And I'm like, this stop. Why did I pick this spot?
No stomp, no blow, nothing?
I didn't hear really? Anything. They just left. But they're on gravel when they were out there, so they're hard to hear on that. And then the leaves were damp. I think I normally would have heard them come in, which was part of what I was thinking with that spot. I'm like, there's so many leaves out there, but it rained.
Yeah.
And so I didn't hear them come in, and I didn't hear them leave. So I thought, and I was like, I want to sit here for 30 more minutes, because 9 o'clock was my mental cutoff time. I'll go back and start the day of Christmas activities. But I got to thinking about it. I'm like, this is stupid. I'm in a dumb spot. Like, I'm not giving myself a good chance to win here. So I'm going to move this stand and see if I can go find a better tree. So I go take all my stuff down. I spend about 15 minutes walking around trying to figure out what tree I want to go back up into. The best one is still where I was, but I talked a little bit in a previous episode about, you know, I'm hunting very close to houses, and I don't really want to be seen. I don't want anybody knowing I'm out there. You know, you see so many of these crazy hunter harassment stories, and I don't want anybody knowing that I'm out there, because if they start calling the landscape place, like, maybe I don't want them to take my hunting rights away. Like if they complain enough, maybe I could lose that, and I don't want to do that, right? So I don't want them to know I'm there. And so I start setting up in another tree that's very much over the highway that they come through. And I'm like, this is also dicey, but I'll have better coverage. It's the one spot that I was back in the wood line enough to where if they're out, they wouldn't be able to see me. Well, what I wasn't putting together. I start putting my, I get up and I get all the way up in the tree to put my platform up. I get my platform up and I get all the way up to the top and I hear,
oh.
I turn around, big old doe, different one had come in. She saw me and she's gone. And I'm like, yeah, they're spotlighting me because they're from the direction they're coming. Mm. And so I'm like, that didn't pick any better spot. Yeah, I'm like further back in the weeds. But when you're coming out, think about when you're coming out of a wood line, the last five trees are very skylit with no foliage. The no foliage is killing me. So I came down and I thought about it some more. And I'm looking at my alternatives. And I'm like, I might be able to carve out. And some of these trees, if I cleaned out of, some of it, I might be able to get a good spot. But at this point, I think it's kind of dumb to try to do just for the reason, like the two examples of me getting busted in this same day. So I actually started looking at ground spots and they have all these tree containers that are plant containers that are out there. And I did hunt in between these the other day when I told the story of me sitting through literally tornadic weather and downpour and then leaving and then getting home and my camera is going off. I'd kind of set in those, using those as a blind, but the problem is it's such a blind. I can't see. You know, I couldn't really build it to where I could see coming in, and so I didn't see them until they were getting close, or I wouldn't have been able to see them until they were getting right in front of me. And I was like, I don't like that. So I ended up building a, just taking some down branches, some of which I had even cut off earlier in the year, to build, to hang where I was in back in October, and put those together. And I'm like, this is a good spot. This is great. Like, this would be great at any point in the year because now I'm away from where they're coming out. I'm behind. I've got some distance. I've got coverage to draw my bow. I've got a shooting window. My lower half is covered. So I'm going to use that on the few days that I can get back out. But I mean, I don't even know when this is going to be at this point because of my wife's work schedule and the weekends. And, you know, I thought our season, in my head, it ran to the end of January, but I checked and it's January
middle.
Yeah. I don't know if they changed that or if I just always had it wrong. But so I'm like, I've only got probably two or three more sits because I can only go on the weekends with this daylight as it is, because the people that maintain the property are out there from 7, sometimes 8 until 5, which would only leave me a 30 minutes of shooting light, or no, an hour of shooting light left. But at that point, you know, I just like don't know if it's really worth like running out there to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's gonna be dicey. We'll see what I can get, but I'm set up. I've got a spot now. I'm like, I think I'm gonna take a 5-gallon bucket. I've got a seat, like a pad that I can put on it, and I think I'd be able to draw. I'd probably be a lot more familiar, like comfortable shooting that way than out of the saddle. I need to practice more in the saddle, obviously, since I've missed two shots this year. And I was telling Eric and Jacob before we came up here, I'm like, this has been the season of like my greatest accomplishment, which was getting a spot with the biggest deer I've ever seen at it. And from that shot forward, it has all just gone downhill. Everything since the second I let go of that arrow at that big buck. And I told that story probably 15 episodes ago, back in, it happened on October 24th, I think I remember it, because I have the trail camera photo, and that was the last good buck I had on camera. And I never would have guessed the deer activity would have fallen off a cliff like it did. And I've talked to a lot of other people about how much they locked up, and I think a lot of people think it's because of the food availability this year. The drop was crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, there's food everywhere. They're not moving as much. They don't need to. And those big bucks just locked down, and I don't think they've come back out really at all. Yeah. So, or if they are, they're coming out for water, and they've got enough food near them to where they're moving very sparsely mm-hmm. right now.
Yeah, on my cameras, during September, October, soybeans were still green. There was a lot of activity in the field because they're still coming in. They're eating the soybeans, bedding down in that field. And then once those soybeans turned brown, the cameras died, with the exception of does in one spot. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that there's so many acorns out there that they don't have to come out,
yeah.
You know, and chasing does or whatever. The does are heading that way for the acorns later in the day, in the morning. So they don't really have to come out. So I'm going to move some cameras around at my place, see if I can get some deeper woods setups for those to try to see. I just want to get an inventory at this point.
You know what's funny? I was sitting there. You ever like think you smell a deer and then it turns out to be you?
Really?
You ever have that? Like I'll have deer pee out and I'm like, I got one coming. And then I realize the wind shifted and it's blowing my scent back in my face, like from my wick or something. Well, I was sitting out on Sunday and I was like, that doesn't smell like ester. Like, that smells different. It smells like a buck pea. And I kept smelling it sporadically. And I'm like, is there a buck bedded out in this tree field somewhere? Like, what is going on? Because the wind was constantly blowing. It wasn't blowing great for me that day. It was kind of blowing back into the woods. And you know, I set up knowing that that entry might be dicey. They might smell me and stop, which I had that happen the other day. A lot of times, though, this year, they've smelled me and kept coming because they're so used to people or weird smells anyways. So I decided, I was like, okay, it's fine. But then the wind kind of shifted to where it was blowing. I was like, okay, well, now they're going to get out of the woods and they'll get stopped. My scent wall might actually stop the deer for me if it comes out. Well, I kept smelling wind coming behind me. And I had a scent wick that I dragged in that I did since, you know, Braden's like, oh, it's the second rut. I'm like, okay, I'll do a drag. And that drag was still hanging on my bag up in the tree. But it's on this, my right side, and the wind's coming from my left. So I'm like, it can't be that wick. Because I had the wick pulled off hanging in it. I had kind of thrown it up in a branch so that the air could catch it. I'm like, what is that smell? That's a deer. I smelled it 5 times in 3 hours. I'd pull my, you know, my gator thing down. And I'm like, yeah, that's a deer. And when I finally got down to move, I got over, and they had moved in like 2 or 3 tons of manure of mulch. And that's what it was.
That was the smell.
Mm. It smelled like deer pee, man, or deer, just deer in general, like a musky deer.
Yeah.
Cause I didn't even recognize that that's what it was until I got up to it. I'm like, oh dude, I've been duped. I was like sitting here all, that's part of why I turned around. I was like overly excited. It's cause I kept smelling it coming from behind me or like to that direction.
Yeah.
And it was a big pile of mulch. So
I had a scrape. When I set up the opening morning of rifle here, I got up in the tree that I had cleared out all summer and didn't know the scrape was here. Didn't see it when I went in that morning, and same thing. I'm up in the tree and I keep smelling. I didn't have anything hanging at that point. Cause I had taken like the spray can. I'm like, what is that? I mean, it's strong. And then I looked down at the base of the tree that I just climbed up, and I was a foot from this community scrape. Mm. It's a pretty good sized scrape, and it was just wafting up. Yeah. It's amazing how that scent just travels through the woods. But yeah, it's always fun to be like,
that spray can gel that you gave me of the Tinks. Is it Tink 69?
Yeah.
My last hunt, I went out and I forgot that you had given it to me. I get all the way up in the stand and I realized that I forgot to, I put the little wick thing on the tree. Is it a wick?
Yeah.
Put it on the tree and I was like, oh man, I forgot to pour the Tinks on it. And I get up in the tree and I was like, oh man, Jacob gave me that thing. Have you used the gel stream before?
Yeah.
Okay. From my stand to like 10 or 15 feet over to the tree, I went and it hit the little wick thing, and then I did some on the ground, like the little scrape I created.
Yeah, that stuff's surprisingly accurate. It's like pretty good.
Yeah, it's not like a spray, it's no. like an actual stream that'll
yeah.
go over.
Yeah, I awesome. Like that stuff too for hitting it on scrapes, because mm-hmm. you don't have to get up in it to sprinkle. You can, you know, stay back 10, 15 feet or so and spray it.
Mm-hmm.
I like those spray cans a lot.
Jacob and I ever told you about going to where they make Tinks?
No.
We went to the facility. This was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Was not prepared. Let's just say that. Not prepared. I thought we were going to their office. We get in there, and I mean, the smell when you walk in.
You hit the lobby.
And it was so strong. Within minutes, I had a headache.
No.
And I don't know how they work in there. They get used to it, I guess. But the smell is insane. And so we do a meeting. And by the end of the meeting, I have a headache, and I'm not really used to it. But you remember, we go out the floor, and we heard, poof, or like, pop. Like, what was that? And they're filling those pressurized cans you're uh-huh. talking about. Remember the dude that was working it? He like ducked.
Yeah.
At one time,
we're the three of us. So it's us two and Corey are walking by, and he ducks. And Corey and Brad are past, but I am right next, like across the line from this guy, and he ducks. And I kind of turn my head. I'm like, I wonder where he ducked. Pow! Right next to me. I don't know how it didn't get on me, but it is a regular occurrence that they just pop.
You think they just go hunting after work and just sit there because they're could. Their own like lure?
You could. Corey was saying that he's like, my wife won't let me in the house until I change. Mm. Because you're just, there's no way you aren't going to smell like that.
Wow.
I mean, it was strong.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. The deer pee. It was cool to see the facility and where they're doing all this stuff. I mean, it wasn't like they're just packaging. I mean, they were filling those cans mm-hmm. right there. That's what was popping it. So, like, I don't remember how many cans. It was like 1 in 100 or something. But, I mean, multiple times while we were on a tour, you'd hear pop, you know, and you knew what was going on. But
I feel like I would prank people with that. Like, I don't know, like try and make the thing explode on them. So then like they just got deer pee bombed.
Maybe that's what happened. The visitors are here, so they just blew one up.
Yeah,
on
yeah, maybe. It was a hit the deck situation, though. Yeah. So
I didn't get that hit the deck memo, though.
No, just the guy that was working it. Mm-hmm. But, anyways, so you went fishing
for like
5 minutes?
Very briefly.
Where'd you go?
Floyd's Fork, just over in the Parklands. I ended up getting a killer deal on a streamer rod, and so I wanted to just go cast it and see how it casts. Dan has a same brand, different rod. And he was talking about how good it was for how inexpensive it was. And so I just wanted to go get a few casts in to see how it casts. It's great rod. It's called Moonshine Rod Company. Anybody out there looking for, you know, kind of an entry level, good starter rod. It cast great. I was impressed with it, but I didn't fish long enough to like feel like I deserved to catch a fish. It was just a brief little thing. But,
was it a fly rod?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I am going Thursday, going out to chase some trout in the second half of the day. It's supposed to get up to like low 50s, which is kind of perfect this time of year. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping the activity is good, because we've talked before, like I went on that fishing trip in November to North Carolina, caught some trout, hadn't killed a deer yet. I was ready to transition to fishing at that point. And so I've been YouTube videos, tying flies, like everything. And so I'm ready to get out and do some fishing.
Looking nice. Forward to it. Yeah. So will the trout fishing be good? Like is it, how good is it over the next couple of months?
Yeah. So it's really dependent upon the body of water, the river system, what the flow is like, how much rain we've gotten. Even though the air temperature might be 30s, 20s, as long as the water temperature is 40s, you're good. I mean, the fish will still be eating, fairly active. If it's in the 50s, that's when you get the bug activity and the fishing is better. So, you know, bigger rivers, tailwaters, the water's pretty constant coming out of the dam. They stay pretty consistent throughout the winter. But like the creeks around here and stuff, you have to concentrate based on the fish you're going after. If you're going after smallmouth, you fish it one way. If you're going after trout, you fish it another. But you got to fish the sunny water if it's cold. So where the water has warmed up a little bit, think about the flows and the oxygen. Something I learned this past weekend, actually, opposite of the warmer weather months, usually you want more current for more dissolved oxygen. But there's like a flip when the water gets really cold to where some of the slower water actually has more dissolved oxygen. Hmm. So I've always, previous winters, I've kind of focused on the wrong water. So I'm excited to go out this week and try that methodology to see if I can find fish in slower water than I usually do.
Now, Floyd's Fork, they stock, but I mean, at this time of year, is it still good or is it like hard fishing?
Yeah, it's good as long as the water level's good. So we got that rain the other day, muddied it up, makes it a little tougher.
Yeah.
But, you know, the creek's been low, and so it concentrates fish in the deeper
so
holes.
So it kind of gets hit hard when they first do it, but then people kind of peter out. And,
oh, yeah, yeah. You know. From a pressure perspective, I ran into a guy that was out there, and he's like, I've been, you know, 6 days in the last couple of weeks, and it gets hit hard. I've last 2 week ends, when I've gone to the creek, there have been 5-6 other people in the general area of me. So, you know, not ideal from a pressure perspective, but at the same time, like I'm glad they're out there fishing because the Fish and Wildlife will keep stocking it.
Right.
And so it's a good thing, but yeah, you know, it's in the wintertime, it does get pressure because it's being freshly stocked, but people don't like going out when it's cold. So I like those days when it's low 30s.
With the pressure, trout get pretty adept from what I've read, like they get pretty smart, right, on what not to hit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they'll get used to seeing the same flies. I if I'm fishing and I'm not getting bites on stuff that has shiny beads on it, I will immediately switch to something that's more muted colors, more natural colors, no shininess, because they learn quickly yeah. that if there's a shiny bead and they get their face ripped off, that they'll sit back and let it go by. So then that's usually when I transition to something that's a little bit more natural.
They're pretty perceptive too, to like even ground movement too, right? So I imagine like a ton of people out there moving around also makes it hard, right?
Yeah. Anybody that's fished for bass knows lateral lines on a bass. And so they can sense vibrations through the water that way. And trout have the same thing. And so if you're walking across the rocks while you're waiting, they're going to feel that. So you have to be really, especially in low, clear water situations, you have to be much more mindful of walking softly, walking slowly, taking your time, looking in a hole before you walk into it, or even fishing that hole before you walk into it, because they do get used to the clunking of rocks, knowing that it's fishing pressure, and they
can feel it from a long ways away too.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, because it travels through water pretty good.
Yeah,
where there's riffles and there's broken water, you're better off, because mm-hmm. they can't sense it as well and they can't see as well through the bubbles and current and stuff. But if it's a still pool, you have to be very mindful. I wear a lot of camo this time of year because of that mm-hmm. low, clear water, no coverage on the trees, just like your deer thing. Like, if there's no coverage behind you and you're spotlighted, yeah. they're looking up, then, you know, you kind of have to think about that.
So. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. It's a lot like hunting. Like,
yeah.
You have to think about all that stuff.
Right.
You just run out there and start casting.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure a lot of people do, though. Like yeah. the people that chase the, you know, the stock and trips, I'm sure they're a lot of people like me. I'd be terrible, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Me too.
Yeah, it's fun. I love this time of year. Like I said, the colder it gets and less people go out because it's cold, you can get the river to yourself. I enjoy it. It's quiet. Yep.
Well, guys, I want to make a quick announcement. I don't know if we've talked about the fact that we're not going to Great American Outdoor Show. I had a guy message me. He was saying he's going to get a go out tattoo. And I was like, that's cool. And he's like, oh, I want to show it to you at Gaos. And I was like, you got to send a picture on that one because I'm not going to be there. So the Team Go Wild decided not to go to that show. That show is, I think we did mention this once, but I mean, that show is just brutal on us. It's, you know, tough time to staff it. And, you know, just for a lot of different reasons, we decided not to go this year. It's a 2-week excursion for our team. So we're kind of flying in and out. People are having to platoon in, platoon out. We had to always find help to run the booth. And so we're not going back. So I apologize to anybody that was hoping they were going to see us this year at the Great American Outdoor Show. Still a great show. Still think it's probably the best consumer show in the country. You know, we encourage you guys to go if you're in the area. Still a great time, but we won't be there this year. We're only doing SHOT Show. We'll be at SHOT Show recording the No Low Ballers podcast with the Ammo Inc. team, the Gun Broker team. So we'll be in their booth. So if you're going to be at SHOT, if you're in the industry and listen to this, you can come by and see us there. We'll have a booth actually built into the Gun Broker booth. We're going to be there with them recording with some insane guests. The lineup has turned into A-list celebrities within the industry. So that's really cool. We're excited to do that. But that's going to be it for – I guess Jacob's going to ATA for a little bit this year. Jacob and Braden?
Dan's going to be up there.
Oh, Dan's going too.
Yeah, I think Braden said something about duck hunting.
Lame. No, but those guys are going to go to ATA. But our focus this year is going to be on SHOT Show. So we'll be in Vegas that week. Me, Jacob, Dan, and Braden will be there. And we'll be there with our co-host Logan Medish, and recorded with Alan from Gun Broker. So if you guys love that show, there's going to be some killer content coming on No Low Ballers. If you haven't checked out No Low Ballers yet, you should definitely hop over, because the you know, we just now, has our first episode from the Daisy trip aired yet?
Daisy should be coming this week, but we just did the Walther one where they sat down with Caleb, can't remember his last name, that is in the process of finishing a book about James Bond and the Walther and, you know, James Bond's
That's cool.
weapons. Really interesting episode. He's a super intelligent dude as far as that history. So
yeah,
definitely check
if
out
you, that. One thing I love about that show is, you know, you don't have to be a firearms expert to enjoy it. You know, I think we have Alan and Logan who are insanely knowledgeable, and they do sometimes start talking about stuff that I don't fully understand, But the good side, flip side of it is like we're there as the idiots for color commentary, and we kind of, you know, you got a nice mix of conversation. But a lot of the stuff that you're learning on that show is just fun. It's not like it's particularly, you know, useful for bidding on gunbroker.com. But like if the, you know, Logan's talking about some of the prop guns that have been used in some of these movies or the history behind some of these, like the machine guns. Still, the Valentine's Day Massacre episode was amazing for all the, you know, how much Logan shared about that. So there's a historical perspective to it. So if you're a history buff, you'll love it. But you don't have to, it's not like a nerding out on history. It's not like deep, deep dive. This isn't like a 2-hour episode. These are 30 minutes, quick hits, fun facts. So check out that show. We'll be recording those in Vegas. Also, you know, shout out to GunBroker for sponsoring this show, Uncensored. So make sure you're checking out GunBroker.com for your, all your firearm needs. There's a reason that almost 10% of firearms sold online, 7 to 10% of firearms sold online comes through GunBroker.com. It's because they're the best. They got the best selection. They've got, you know, you're going to find good deals at times. You're going to be able to find things that you can't just find walking out to your normal shop because it's sold from all over the country. And it's easy, super easy. So you can go in, make your bid, you pick it up at your FFL. That's it. So they've got the best game in town when it comes to auctioning off guns. And a lot of these sales are new. You know, I think a lot of people think it's just old firearms, and that's not the case. But anyways, I think that's it for us on the announcement side. I was going to mention the rewards that Erica dropped, but if you haven't seen those yet on your Go Wild profile, those are worth checking out. Those she launched a tack bag deal, and we've got a couple other ones that are coming out. Yep. So make sure you're logging time for the shows because that's how you unlock these rewards. You know, any time outside. I just unlocked my 50K sticker this morning.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm pretty pumped about that one. That was the one milestone sticker I think I was missing. So. Sweet.
We're probably gonna have to make new ones for Larson and some people here soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, there's definitely a few. Like, we need a 100K sticker because we've got some people that have hit that milestone. So, anyways, to log time, go to your Go Wild account, hit the plus sign, log time, hit Outdoor Podcast, and you'll find us there, Uncensored. You can also log your time for No Low Ballers or any other podcast you're listening to. You had Jacob, Brad, and Erica here, so let us know what you thought of this episode. Thanks, y'all.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.